Okay, let's get started. Thank you for your patience with us. My name is Paul Gallet. I'm the president of Riverkeeper, which is an organization created about 55 years ago to protect the character of the Hudson Valley, our water reserves, and assure that we were creating more sustainable communities, not repeating old mistakes that had led to some pretty bad decisions and pretty serious pollution problems. We're looking at a proposal today that the Wheelabrator Incinerator Company has brought to the town of Catskill to create an enormous toxic incinerator ash dump in the old Peckham Quarry that would go on for 48 years of operation, 48 years dust, toxic leachate, and toxic ash coming into one of our most valued, pristine, and important communities. And Riverkeeper is part of an amazing coalition of groups who are here and represented, and who are represented in a letter that we've sent to the supervisor of Catskill this morning in order to say, we did not just spend the last 50 years cleaning up the Hudson River and strengthening community character in just to start importing toxic incinerator ash into those communities. That cannot happen. That is not who we are, and that is not who we're going to be in the future. We need a better way for this site. We have three speakers who are going to talk with you about the problems with the Wheelabrator proposal and what might be better answers for this site. And I'm going to introduce them in just a moment. We have a growing coalition, as I mentioned earlier. I think there are 180 signatories on the letter that we've sent to supervisor in Catskill. And we have 53 organizations who are signed on to it as well. And I think that when the government in Catskill sees the level of concern and understands the issues, as I know that they will come to understand them, they will agree that this is not a proposal that should move forward, that we should be concentrating as soon as possible on assuring that there's a better answer for this site. Now, a quick word about the State Department of Environmental Conservation. And we want to make sure that Supervisor Davis is well aware that the DEC has sent two letters to the Wheelabrator Company about this project already. And they are both extremely critical of the suitability of this site for the intended use. And as a consequence, we think that it's important that the supervisor realize we could take years in a process that will almost certainly, if the right result is reached, lead to the denial of the application, or we can get more quickly to the end of this bad proposal and the beginning for deliberations and discussions within the community and with the site owner about what would be a better solution for this site. So the sooner this project is abandoned, the sooner that risk goes away, and the essential work on developing a better plan for the site can begin in earnest. And I'll say it one more time just before I yield the floor. The folks here representing groups from locally in the Catskill community all the way down to the far corners of the state did not spend the last 50 years cleaning up the Hudson River, restoring community character in communities like Catskill so that the Hudson could be trashed yet again, and communities like Catskill and Athens and surrounding areas could be trashed yet again by toxic dust, toxic leachate, and toxic groundwater intrusion from a toxic incinerator ash proposal such as Wheelabrator wants to bring to the town of Catskill. So I'm going to introduce Judith Enck at this point. And Judith Enck is a senior fellow and visiting faculty member at Bennington College, where she teaches classes on plastic pollution and is the founder of Beyond Plastics. Appointed by President Obama, she served as the regional administrator of the U.S. EPA overseeing environmental protection in New York, New Jersey, 8 Indian nations, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Judith previously served as Deputy Secretary for the Environment in New York's Governor's Office and served as a policy advisor to the New York State Attorney General. Prior to that, she had an illustrious career with New York Public Interest Research Group, Environmental Advocates of New York,
Hudson River Sloop Clearwater, the Nonprofit Resource Center, and she is the designer of her town's rural recycling program. Join me in welcoming Judith Fink.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning, everyone. And I really want to thank everyone who's come out today, and in particular for the leadership by Hudson Riverkeeper, having Paul and Jess and others from Riverkeeper leading the charge on this is so important. I too have spent about the last 30 years working to clean up the Hudson, and I in Greene County went to high school in Catskill and am taking this project very seriously. The Wheelabrator Incinerator Company wants to build this new ash landfill less than a half mile from the Hudson River. They want to bring in about 445,000 tons of ash every year to Catskill. They want this ash dump near the Hudson River to last for Their current plan is to bring toxic incinerator ash from their existing facilities in Peekskill in Westchester County, Poughkeepsie, and also in Hudson Falls. And they also leave the opportunity open to bring in ash from other incinerators, likely in the Northeast. We are very concerned about the public health and the environmental impacts of this project, and today we're calling on Catskill Town Supervisor Doreen Davis to reject this proposal. Not a lot of people know that this proposal is being seriously considered. Here are the facts as we know them. Wheelabrator is the second largest incinerator company in the country. They own 19 garbage incinerators and 3 ash dumps. They are a waste-burning giant, and they are about to get bigger. On February 12th of this year, Wheelabrator announced that they have been bought out by Macquarie Infrastructure, the Macquarie Group, a large multinational bank and financial services company from Australia. Wheelabrator wants to establish this new ash dump in Catskill on Route 9W in an old quarry mine recently purchased a few years ago by Peckham Industries. The whole operation will cover about 159 acres. Garbage incineration does not allow for landfills. For every 4 tons of solid waste that's burned, you get 1 ton of ash generated. Incinerators generate 2 different kinds of ash. Fly ash, which is the fine particles that collect on the air pollution control equipment of incinerators and coal plants and anything with a big smokestack. And then bottom ash, which is the non-combustible residue remaining after burning. Think about what you see at the bottom of a wood stove or the bottom. It's of that quality. It's very fine. Fly ash in particular has a high concentration of toxic compounds. That's why Paul Gallet was absolutely correct when he referred to this as toxic ash. Fly ash has dioxins, the most toxic material known to science. It's a byproduct of combustion. When you burn solid waste, in particular plastics, you generate dioxin. Incinerator ash has a range of heavy metals, including lead, children's ability to learn, mercury, which damages our central nervous system, kidneys, and developing fetuses. Incinerator ash also has cadmium, arsenic, and chromium, to name just a few of the heavy metals. Over the years, the ash has gotten more toxic because incinerators are burning more plastic and then more electronic waste and batteries, which are loaded with heavy metals. It's amazing that we'll run an ash dump so close to the Hudson for 48 years. We also know that this is in 2 phases, but that this will last at least 48 years. For people in Catskill, today might be the first time they're hearing about this proposal. Wheelabrator has had many meetings with the New York Department of Environmental Conservation, They submitted their initial permit application to the DEC 2 years ago in March. And this project has been known to the town of Catskill, but we don't know for how long. In its permit application to the DEC, Wheelabrator says the following. Initial engagement with the public sector demonstrated community interest in having the project move forward through the due process review. We'd like to know who in the public sector said that to Wheelabrator to start this multi-year process. Something for you. When you call Wheelabrator, they're going to say, oh, our ash is not toxic. It's not regulated as toxic. And what happened is in the mid-80s, incinerator ash was failing the toxicity test that environmental regulators used. Fly ash failed 100% of the time, bottom ash failed 39% of the time, and the combined ash samples failed 48% of the time. If this ash was considered a hazardous waste, every incinerator in this country would be shut down because it was to permitted commercial hazardous waste facilities. And there's just not enough space. Wheelabrator argued in court that if general solid waste was exempt from toxic testing, ash should also be exempt. This went all the way up to the Supreme Court, which in 1994 ruled that incinerator ash must be tested, and if it failed, it must go to a hazardous waste facility. At that time, the state of New York argued that the ash should not be ruled toxic, but should be considered waste and to go to a special waste landfill. An old quarry mine is not a special waste landfill. The court then left it to the EPA to determine how the toxic leachate test was done, and EPA changed the testing protocol, making it much more lax. So Wheelabrator will argue it's not regulated as a toxic material, but in fact, if you take samples, you will see that it's toxic, and what really will reach groundwater and the Hudson, no matter what you call it. One noted scientist called this linguistic detoxification. Mm-hmm. A few words about Wheelabrator. In 2011, the state of Massachusetts fined Wheelabrator a record $7.5 million for violating environmental laws at their incinerator and ash landfill sites, multiple violations of the Hazardous Waste Management Act and the Clean Water Act. The Massachusetts Environmental Commissioner at the time called it case arising out of environmental violations. So Wheelabrator holds the record at the time for the highest environmental fine in the state of Massachusetts. Some of the Wheelabrator violations are very relevant to what they are attempting to do in Catskill. State investigators found a hole in the roof and the side wall of the Wheelabrator ash house, enabling the ash to be released into the atmosphere. They failed to properly treat the ash before disposal and release of wastewater surrounding wetlands. At another Wheelabrator facility, they released 15,000 gallons of ash water. Untreated ash was transported from the plant to landfills in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. And what I think it's important is that the Massachusetts Environmental Strike Force started their investigation in 2009, but did not conclude it until 2011. So you've got a two-year period where damage is occurring. And if you want a more recent example of how Wheelabrator is not a good neighbor, Wheelabrator recently sued the city of Baltimore for waste from their city to be burned in the Wheelabrator incinerator in Baltimore. They are penalizing the people of Baltimore for recycling and composting and reducing their waste stream and not sending them enough waste. Wheelabrator is suing the city of Baltimore for $32 million because Baltimore is doing a good job at recycling. What Wheelabrator does is they target communities that are economically struggling. They count on people not having the time to stand up against them. I know that the people of Catskill and the neighboring communities are going to focus on this. And there are some important local questions that need to come up, particularly involving the leachate from the ash dump. And we're going to hear about why that is such a problem. So today, we are all calling on Catskill Town Supervisor Doreen Davis to stand up for her community and to reject this proposal. She waited a few years for the state to complete its review. That is a mistake. After an important article appeared in the Catskill Daily Mail in February, the town of Catskill put a notice on its website saying, quote, "We have been assured that this project does not involve any burning, does not involve any organic materials, and does not create any gas emissions." Does not say who they've been assured by. It goes on to say that if this is approved for our industrial corridor, the local community will receive additional revenue. So this is not exactly a mutual statement. We don't know how much money Wheelabrator is offering the town of Catskill to host this community. In my view, no amount of money paid to the town of Catskill by Wheelabrator is justified with such a risky project, no matter how much money they are offering. When the public and health and environmental threats of this magnitude, we need local elected officials to stand up for their community. Local elected officials cannot outsource their responsibility. I am confident that the DEC will take a very close look at this because the project is so risky. But Wheelabrator will have their own lawyers, their own engineers at the table, and concerned citizens simply won't have the tens of thousands of dollars that are needed to keep up and fully participate in this process. That kind of money in Catskill. People in Catskill are not going to make donations totaling $100,000 or so to fight this project. And this is the same phenomena that we see happening in the city of Rensselaer, for instance, with a very polluting construction and demolition debris landfill. So Catskill needs to stand up for itself, and all of the elected officials need to tell Wheelabrator they are not welcomed in Catskill with this project.
I want to announce that we will be holding a community meeting Tuesday, April 23, at 7 p.m. at the Catskill Community Center, 344 Main Street. And we hope that you will all attend that as well, because this information needs to get out broadly. This sort of information wants to be free so that people can make intelligent decisions. And I think when they hear all the information, they'll understand why Judith Enck is so correct. There isn't enough money in the world to make this project worthwhile when you look at the damage that it would do. And Judith alluded to the issue of leachate, which is a technical term for what happens when rainwater mixes with the toxic ash that has been disposed of into this dump, and then that ash and rainwater mix becomes known as leachate, and that leachate needs to be removed from the quarry in order to manage the site and get more. And the way they remove that leachate, and I'm sure that Paul Lubin is going to talk about this in more detail as soon as I bring him up to the stage, is by taking it to the Catskill Wastewater Treatment Plant. Now, do you want your municipal wastewater mixed with dioxins, cadmium, chromium, lead, other toxics, and then discharged into the Hudson River? Do you think that that wastewater treatment plant those kind of wastes? The answer is no. So let me bring up Paul Rubin. Paul Rubin is an environmental consultant and expert on geologic, hydrogeologic, and environmental issues. Mr. Rubin assists in identifying issues and developing strategies designed to protect groundwater and surface water resources, community character, historic sites, and wildlife habitat. And we're very lucky to have him join us today.
Thank you. I'm going to make use of this figure over here, hopefully. But let's take a look at the situation geologically, where we're going to put these wastes and what is in place to hold them in place. The main quarry area is this area here. Route 9W is here, only about 400 feet away. within the quarry area, it turns out in Catskill, you're in a zone geologically that's referred to as the Hudson Valley Fold Thrust Belt. That's because tectonically the area has been so faulted that we get slices upward, one geologic unit, another geologic unit, and yet another one, all against each other, each fault representing a potential pathway. And in the quarry wall, not only would we have these faults, but we have potential blast impacts. We have the potential for the migration of contaminants from that quarry area, which is going to be about 350 feet high with fly ash when we're done. That would place that level about well over 200 feet above Route 9W. So if you can imagine a mass of waste perched against the bed, 200 feet higher than the nearest road and further off toward the Hudson over here, we have a potential pathway. And certainly they have had geologists and mining engineers working on the site for a long time. So they have a pretty good handle of the geology, and for us, a pretty good handle on what matters most. And that would be, the question is, what are the most likely off-site contaminant transport pathways? So I'd like to quote the geologic firm that's been doing the bulk of the geology work, a guidebook paper on this and other material, and they've summarized it pretty nicely right here. I'm going to just read their quote. The combination of physical and chemical variations in the various beds, geologic beds, and the presence of folds and faults every 100 feet in any direction results in the Catskill Quarry's reputation as a geologist's dreamland and a mining engineer's nightmare. So those pathways are there. So in terms of what are the dominant pathways for contaminant site, one of them is through the wall of the quarry, through these faults and fractures, especially as we build up that waste mass and any liquid that forms within it, the leachate. Another pathway is over here. Let's take a look in the quarry first. What I've done on this map, and I think there's some sample examples of this in the back there, I've taken a look at over the last several years of the water levels in the quarry when it's been relatively inactive. So the pink small area in the quarry floor is 2009. Here and here, that's the water level in the quarry floor in 2013. And in red, around this area here, that's the water level in 2016. So what's happening is when the quarry is not being used, a certain amount of the quarry water is coming in from both precipitation and from groundwater coming into it. And that's the quarry floor, of course, is where they're going to start to put in their system. And the bottom of their system for containing the leachate is sort of a rock rubble base on which they'll put up two geomembrane layers. We'll get back to that in a second. But what would happen if we continue to let things go as they are now? The water level of the quarry, unless it starts leaking through the walls before this point, will eventually reach essentially a threshold elevation, and that's where the trucks would come out through their entry point here, and that's a roughly 209 feet above sea level. So right now, the water level of the quarry is probably in about the 192-foot level. So at some point, this quarry were to keep filling without any waste, in the dominant exit pathway for clean water would be over where the trucks go out, right in here. So that would be about 209 feet, more or less. So that's the main route. But where does it go, okay? Judy mentioned that at this distance from this to the quarry edge, the nearest distance down to the Hudson River, right here, it's just about 2,500 feet. But in fact, it doesn't need that 2,500 feet. All it really needs is to get from that high elevation feet above Route 9W and geologic formations over here, down into the nearest stream network, which I've illustrated on the map here. These streams are just a straight shot to the Hudson. So it's not like it's really a half a mile from the Hudson. It's not far at all. So let's talk about, for a second, what they're going to do. They're going to try to keep the waste in the quarry by using a rock rubble base, some cleaner geomembranes where they would then have capturing pipes and whatnot to get the leachate, and they would collect it and it would have to come out through time. I've had the opportunity in some of my work in Western Pennsylvania looking at crack pits, seeing these geomembrane liners size of 8 football fields. It's just enormous. And at the bottom here, I put a picture where I show where a patch has been made on this. I see, looking at these enormous areas of geomembrane, they fail. They have holes. They have failures. All kinds of reasons that things fail. And that's great, because in this case, in the frack pits, they go in and they use seam sealers and they fill it in. It's all great. So we don't have that opportunity here, because it'll all be covered with fly ash. Meanwhile, as the ash is put in, it'll start to condense and compact, and that subsidence will probably cause liner failure, not to mention if it happens to get against sharp rocks at all. So, you know, will the leachate collection system work here? Groundwater down low? I guess I would be concerned. I used to work in a building just over here in the Attorney General's office, and I was instrumental in helping make the decision for how to deal with the toxic waste at Love Canal. What do you know? Mm. Dioxin was one of those wastes. And we looked at things hydrologically very seriously. And ultimately, what we decided is to create an inward hydraulic gradient, pumping all the waste into a collection point. And that's how it is today. This is like Love Canal. The same idea. You need to maintain the inward hydraulic gradient in order to collect the waste. But what happens? The real thing here is, we mentioned 48 years, but these toxic metals, chromium, arsenic, lead, zinc, the list goes on, they survive a long time, hundreds of years. So who's going to maintain this after 48 years? Are you going to keep pumping this out for that long a period of time, or are you going to do something to get that, something other than to let this waste go in? And that, I'm going to just add, first, Catskill can do better. There are other alternatives out there. Take a look online. You'll see people have adapted these quarries into magnificent things, nature preserves, hiking trails. Picture here, a huge hotel complex with trails around it, ecotourism friendly, a future for a town. That could be done here. Along that line, I drew on the map a trail. There's a Ridgecrest Trail looking right on the Hudson, 1.2 miles long, just from here. What a great treat. If you were to regrade and reclaim this quarry into something other than ash dump, you could have an 80-acre lake. What a resource. So look to the future as a place to go, a destination.
Thank you, Paul. You know, Riverkeeper, we have a couple of basic principles that we try to live by. And Paul and Judith have both illustrated the most important principle, which is follow the data, follow the science. And there are so many problems when you look at the data, when you look at the science, and when you look at the history of other such facilities, you start to realize that this is an old school solution to a new world problem, which is we have to reinvent our communities, we have to reinvent the way we manage waste, we have to reinvent how we look at levels of safety, and we cannot on our watch make the same mistake with this toxic ash dump that we made in countless situations in the past. We can do better. We that Riverkeeper lives by is always try to be true to the community, always try to be responsive to the needs of the people who are in the frame, who are here on the stage, and we have a member of the Catskill community who is going to join us now. His name is Mark Vian, and he is a resident of the town of Catskill with a background in restoration ecology. He has a refreshingly short bio, but he has an awful lot to say. So, Mark, come join us.
As Paul said, my name is Mark Vian. I'm a resident of the town of Catskill, and I have just a couple of thoughts to add what's already been presented. I'm here today because the Wheelbrader incinerator ash landfill is proposed to be sited in my town, and because I believe that the project has the potential to seriously compromise the really fabulous progress that my town leaders have made in recent years in bringing new life and economic vitality to Catskill. So I'm here to call on my community to fully inform itself, come and to stay engaged in the review process as we go forward, and to learn about the very serious environmental risks the project represents that you've heard about, risk that will be borne by future generations, and as Paul indicated, probably many future generations. I want to reiterate what Paul said, the invitation that Paul gave, that the community can begin that self-education process by attending the public forum being held Tuesday, April 23rd. At 7 p.m. at the Catskill Community Center on Main Street. I know that all the members of the Catskill Town Board care deeply about the long-term reputation of the town, and so I'm also here to call on my town boards, as well as the State Conservation Department, to make every effort to invite the community deeply into the review process and to make their deliberations fully transparent. If we want our town to be a place where its children have the opportunity as well as the desire to the entire community needs to come together to understand all the risks posed by this project. As you just heard, the project does pose serious risks to the environment, and because of this, it also poses risks to the reputation of the town of Catskill, which is a primary gateway to Greene County, a county where 1 in 10 people, 1 to 10 workers are employed in the tourism industry, a sector of the economy that is largely dependent based on a protected natural the Catskills forests, rivers, lakes, mountains. We cannot afford to allow our town to become synonymous with Love Canal simply because we are a relatively poor town in a relatively poor county. We are tempted to go the way of, might be tempted to go the way of third world countries that have no economic alternatives, but to accept environmental degradation in exchange for economic development. The town of Catskill is not a third world community, and residents of Catskill aren't responsible for the ill-defined business model of waste-to-energy projects that can't be profitable unless they shift environmental and economic costs onto the backs of future generations. A few months ago, I became a grandfather for the first time. It's our responsibility as residents of Catskill to leave a legacy to future generations that we can be proud of, not one that we can be ashamed of. I feel confident that once the community has a complete project in Catskill, that both the State Conservation Department and the town boards, where they have purview, will find that the long-term environmental economic risks outweigh the short-term economic benefit and will reject this proposal. Thanks all for coming today.
One of the wonderful aspects of being on a panel with over 100 years of combined experience in trying to foster sustainability in better ways is that each of the speakers has been extraordinarily their explanations as to why this is such a concern for us. And I do hope that you all will attend the community meeting on April 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Catskill Community Center at 344 Main Street in Catskill so you can learn more about the project. And I wonder if anyone in the audience from the press has additional questions or additional matters they'd like us to address before we adjourn.
Could someone describe the permits that were applied for at the DEC, like specifically what they are or when?
Well, no final decision has been made by the DEC on the permits that the Liberator has applied for. I don't know the list of permits. It's been pretty hard to get information on this. It's not on anyone's webpage. The important thing is that the Department of Environmental Conservation has not accepted the application. And I think that's the most
as complete.
Right.
So the process has not started. There is a letter, a very good letter from the Department of Environmental Conservation, November 25th, 2016, where they tell Liberator, the department has significant concerns with the proposed site meeting the landfill siting requirements under Section 360 of the Part 360 regulations. So those are the solid waste regulations. I'm sure there will be water permits, air permits, you know, there's dust. you know, the ash does not stay in one place. So it's early in the DEC review process.
And there is a second letter from DEC from, I believe, March 2017, and I would encourage you all to get copies of that. I'm sure that Jessica Roth, Riverkeeper's Director of Advocacy and Engagement, and I can assure that you will see those letters. And those letters show a proper concern for the many of the issues that we've been. Any other questions?
What authority does Catskill have to reject it? Under what mechanism?
I'm going to encourage virtually everybody from the panel to answer this, but the first thing I'd say is this is happening on their watch, mm-hmm. within the four corners of their town, and they have a responsibility to the future to try to foster the best possible solution to the future of the Peckham Quarry. Mm-hmm. And everything that could happen in a positive direction on this project.
Did they have a vote to take either up or down? I mean, zoning or anything?
So it depends who the lead agency is under SEAKER. It mm-hmm. could be the town of Catskill. It could be the state DEC. I think the first thing that the town supervisor and the Catskill town board can do is pass a resolution opposing this ash dump and sending it to Wheelabrator and their new parent company, the Australian Bank. Let's see how that goes. If Wheelabrator, Catskill can weigh in with the DEC and say they're opposed. They also can pass local laws, which we have seen around the country, protecting their community. For instance, Brian, as you know, in the town of Clemens, when the cement plant, Lafarge, wanted to burn municipal solid waste from Connecticut and burn tires, the town of Clemens, out of the gate, did a news conference with local environmental leaders, said they were opposed, and about 2 putting severe restrictions on what can and can't be burned and then requiring continuous emissions monitoring. There's no reason why the town of Catskill could not pass a similar local law. You can't spot zone, but for instance, you can say you can't site an ash dump within 3 miles of the Hudson, for instance. That would stand up. I think, you know, my worry after meeting with the town supervisor is how passive the town is being and just review process to a very busy state agency that will likely take years.
Has lead agency been established?
No.
Judith, what are those conversations, how were they with the town supervisor? What did you express and what did you get in return?
Well, it was a very odd meeting about 5 weeks ago, Jess. So it was Riverkeeper, myself, a local resident from Greene County, Mary Finneran attended, who's a local environmental leader, and the town supervisor, who was very gracious and, you know, very welcoming and nice, say anything about the project. She was just here to listen. It's never a good start when you're dealing with such a vital issue. And then she made the case that she cannot tell a private landowner what to do with their own property, which is absolutely not true. We pointed out that, for instance, when communities were faced with threats from hydrofracking, you had local governments pass local laws saying no fracking, passing resolutions. So, meeting, I think she's keeping an open mind. I also think that she's completely deferring to her phrase with subject matter experts. I'm a subject matter expert on this, and I didn't feel like there was a lot of interest in hearing about public health and environmental impacts. And we invited the town supervisor to attend the forum next week in Catskill. Unfortunately, she declined our invitation to be on the panel. However, she will attend, and I think that's really good, and she'll have a...
And I think the last thing I'd like to say is, as a former member of the DEC staff team down in the regional office in New York City, we only ever had one municipal agency to deal with, and that was New York City. And I think they have about 200,000 employees in the city of New York, and they've got some geologists, and they've got some engineers, and they've got some capacity. I think that when you look at a town like Catskill, And I think that if we do our jobs well and they do their job well, they'll start to understand that the concerns that we've voiced are beyond serious and that they need to take a more active role here. They can't just be waiting for the state to make a decision that could be years into the future and could require any number of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in public and private money to be devoted to a project that, if you look at those two DEC letters, you'll understand years' worth of opportunity to design a better solution for this site. So that's what we're looking for the town to concentrate on.
Can you indicate where the ash's current destinations are? Where's it going now?
Sure. So remember, I think it's going to be more than three incinerators sending ash here, but currently the Peekskill incinerator ash was going to the Sprout Brook landfill, which is now closed in Westchester. So it's going at an ash dump that Wheelabrator owns. The Poughkeepsie incinerator ash is currently going to the Colony landfill nearby. And Hudson Falls incinerator is trucking their ash to Shrewsbury, Massachusetts, to an ash dump there.
Is that municipal owned, or is they own that one as well?
I believe they're all privately owned, except the Colony landfill. Mm-hmm. And some of the documents say that, quote, they mention these three incinerators by name, mm-hmm. and say that they will also have the potential to accept other inert waste streams. If you go to Appendix E of the site selection report. So not exactly transparent. I think that obviously means they can bring incinerator ash in from other incinerators, not just these three.
But the 445,000 tons represents the three facilities.
Yes, just the three, exactly.
Thank you.
Saw the hand go up. Thank you all for coming. Please come again on the 23rd, and please continue to cover the story. It could not be more important. Thanks again.
And media, please make sure to sign in. And there's packets with the press release and the letter and a map of the area.